a discussion of the book The Anti-Cancer Diet: Reduce Cancer Risk Through the Foods You Eat. That's author Dr. David Kayat. And at 11:30 on the Monday Morning Radio Zine, host Paul Rowland interviews David Gessner, author of the new book All the Wild That Remains, Edward Abbey, Wallace Stegner, and the American West. That's all we have for this morning. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Monday.
And you do have it tuned to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. As you just heard, coming up next, Sam Bowman speaks with Brett Diamond of the Benton Food Freedom Campaign for Measure 2-89, the local food system ordinance that creates rights relating to agriculture and prohibits genetically engineered organisms. It looks like Sam, the boo player is gone, so go for it. You're on.
All right. Good morning. Thank you for listening to KBOO Community Radio. The time is now 10 o'clock. My name is Sam Bowman. Air Cascadia is on a break this morning, but we're going to take a look instead at a measure on tomorrow's ballot in Benton County. Benton County is in the southern Willamette Valley. It's home to Corvallis, Oregon State University, and a significant agricultural economic base. Measure 289 seeks to make Benton the second county in Oregon to ban genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, after Jackson County did so a year ago. This flies in the face of a state law that was enacted in 2013 that bans such local restrictions, but the measure's backers think they have a way around that law. And for more on that, I'm joined over the phone by Brett Diamond with the group Benton Food Freedom. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Sam.
So, Brett, can you tell me a little bit? I guess we have a short time, so I just want to get to the nuts and bolts, first of all. Can you tell me a little bit about the idea of a local food system in your ordinance and how that could play into overcoming this state law against what you're trying to do?
Yeah, you bet. At its core, Measure 289 is about protecting family farmers, farm workers, pollinators, and our seed heritage from the harms associated with the GMO corporate food system. It is a initiative written by Benton County farmers for Benton County farmers, and it's designed to protect the Benton County food system from GMO contamination. And I just wanted to add that when this passes, we will be the third county in Oregon. Josephine County passed a similar measure last May as well as Jackson County.
That's right, yeah. So just to get back to how do you plan to... So the law enacted in 2013, it actually... sort of prohibits what Josephine passed, but Jackson can go into full effect because they got their signatures in before the law was passed.
Senate Bill 863 was really kind of a backroom deal with the biotech companies who attached a rider to the education bill. And the idea was is that all decisions about agriculture should be made at the state level. However, this really flies in the face of the Oregon Constitution, and please bear in mind that I'm not a lawyer, but the Oregon Constitution grants autonomy to all Oregon counties to set their own rules. Not only do we feel that this violates the Oregon Constitution, but the irony is they kind of took the ball away from the counties and said, no, we're going to handle this. And then since then, they've really dropped the ball in that they've done really nothing. Kitzhaber put together the GMO task force, and you know they met a few times, and what they basically came up with was this idea that coexistence is the way to go. and that it's kind of a, you know, we just all need to get along and communicate with each other and we won't have any problems. But the evidence shows that that just doesn't work. As we saw 2 years ago in Eastern Oregon, we found, a farmer made a discovery of some illegal GMO wheat that had never been approved for human consumption growing in his fields. And that sent the discovery of that illegal GMO wheat sent the international wheat markets into a panic. Tens of millions of dollars in not just Oregon wheat sales, but U.S. wheat sales were canceled by Asia and Europe, who for the most part won't touch GMOs with a 10-foot pole. They want nothing to do with them. Fortunately, it appears to have been an isolated incident, and I think that we were able to reassure Asian and European buyers that it was a test plot that we were unaware of. We still haven't been able to explain exactly how that wheat got in this Eastern Oregon farmer's field, because that particular field never was a test plot, and all of that seed was supposed to have been destroyed. But it's indicative of the nefariousness of this problem. And so while we narrowly averted disaster here in Oregon with the wheat, in the southeastern U.S. in 2006, they had an incident where Liberty rice was discovered. Again, it had never been approved for human consumption, and it was discovered in a five-state area. And the settlement with farmers and the cleanup cost totaled over $2 billion, billion with a B. The cost, the risk here are enormous. And people, you know, I think a lot of southeastern U.S. rice farmers would say that, you know, yes, we got the settlement and yes, we were able to clean it up, but our reputation has been really damaged now. We do not have anywhere near the sales that we used to. And again, in 2001, there was a similar incident where Starlink corn, another GMO corn, again, never approved for human consumption, was discovered to have permeated about 80% of the U.S. corn supply. And what's interesting about the Starlink corn case is it wasn't the FDA that discovered it. It wasn't the USDA. It certainly wasn't the chemical companies that sell GMOs. It was a small little nonprofit that took it upon themselves to go into a few grocery stores across the U.S. and buy random boxes of taco shells and bags of tortilla chips and test the DNA to see what was there, and lo and behold, they found this GMO corn. And when a full investigation was launched, it was found that this corn, again, had infiltrated, you know, over 80% of the U.S. corn supply. So, and since Starlink corn and the Liberty Link rice, there really hasn't been any new regulations or laws or guidelines set in place to prevent this kind of thing from happening again.
And so in Benton County in particular, can you talk about the current distribution of GMO crops there? And have there been any significant incidents or complaint about the presence of them?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm not aware, and I don't think anyone else in Benton County is aware, of a specific incident where GMO contamination has been found. However, it's really important to notice that GMO cross-contamination is a lot like radiation. You can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it. You won't know it's there unless you specifically test for it. It requires sophisticated equipment, and the tests are expensive. They run about $500 to $600 each. And then the question becomes, well, who is actually going to do the testing? Who's going to pay for it? And let's say that you're a relatively small organic farmer. You've got maybe 40 or 50 acres, and you think that maybe you're a seed, organic seed producer, and you think maybe your chard has been contaminated by a neighbor's, you know, GMO crops. So you can pay to have the testing done, but then you always run the risk of permanent damage, permanent reputation problems with your farm if you find contamination. You'd have to rip up that crop, you'd have to replant, but you would always be kind of, there'd be this air of caution or suspicion over organic food or seed coming from your farm. And so there's not a really huge incentive to go do the testing. It's kind of a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing, and that's really not healthy. The problem is that opponents of our bill say, look, you know, it's just a volunteer system. We communicate with each other. It's farmer to farmer. We do pinning. You know, we put on the map, you know, where we're going, you know, what crop. But the truth is that sounds great, and in some instances it works okay. The problem is that it's completely voluntary. There is no, when you buy GMO seed, there is no requirement that you inform your neighbors that you're growing it. And even opponents of the bill, even the biotech lobby, when you ask them how many GMO farmers are there actually growing GMOs in Benton County, and they can't tell you. Nobody seems to know. Really? Our best understanding is that there are maybe 6 to 10 farmers in Benton County right now growing GMO crops, but we really have no way of knowing that for sure. And so in the big picture, that's kind of what this boils down to. Is it worth risking the entire Benton County food system so that a small handful of farmers can grow a very small number of GMO crops, when we're looking at potential losses in the billions of dollars and perhaps permanent damage to our reputation? It's worth noting that Benton County is the United States' fifth largest producer of organic seed. It's a huge industry, and it's growing, you know, every year. It gets larger and larger. Should we risk that market? Should we risk our food system just so a small handful of farmers can grow what's really a very small amount of GMO crops?
All right. And to get to one of the criticisms of this measure, which has been made and responded to by your group a number of times, some critics say that the measure will have a negative impact on the agricultural and medical research at Oregon State University in Corvallis. Which, yes. By some accounts, they say it could lead to numerous layoffs and lost funding opportunities. Is there going to be any impact on OSU from this measure?
Yeah, it's. I'm glad you brought the issue up. We're really disappointed with the way that OSU has presented this issue. The bottom line is this. In any ballot initiative in the state of Oregon has to comply with what's called the single subject rule, which means it can only be about one subject. In our case, the ballot title is the Benton County Local Foods Ordinance, Local Food System Ordinance. It only applies to food. So when this is passed by voters, it will only apply to GMO food crops in Benton County. And what OSU and then our opponents are doing is they're taking a line or two out of the initiative, and they're taking it out of context, and they're saying that this bans all GMOs, it bans patented seeds, it's going to stop medical research. So this is the example that I use. The title is the key. Let's say, for example, that it was the Benton County Equestrian Safety Initiative, and there was a section in there that said, all riders over the age of 6 must wear a helmet. Now, does that mean all bicycle riders must wear a helmet? No, because the ballot title is equestrian safety. It only applies to horseback riding. Would all skateboard riders need to wear a helmet? No. Would all bus riders need to wear a helmet? No. The single subject of the initiative, in this example, is equestrian safety. And it's the same thing with our measure. It's about the local food system ordinance and nothing else. It would only apply to open field pollinated food crops in Benton County.
All right. And Brett, so we only have about 30 seconds left. Do you have anything you'd like to say to voters in Benton County for tomorrow?
Yeah, this is a very serious and real issue. And because of the significance of GMO contamination, 9 other counties in the U.S. have had put similar measures before their voters, and all 9 of them have passed. usually by wide margins. Communities recognize the threat to their food system. They recognize that this is balanced against the out-of-state chemical companies and their profits, and they've done the right thing. They've voted to protect their food systems, and we're confident that Benton County voters will do the same thing tomorrow.
All right. Brett Diamond with Benton Food Freedom, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Sam.
All right. And again, my name is Sam Bowman, and we're going back over to Kate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Shake the Dust, May 23rd and 24th at the Clinton Street Theater. Executive producer and rapper Nasir Jones takes a fascinating look at how hip-hop and the acrobatic breakdancing culture strike a resonant chord in the slums, favelas, and ghettos of the world, inspiring young people everywhere to enact social change. In Shake the Dust, B-boys and B-girls hone their gravity-defying breakdancing techniques in virtually every country on the planet, filmed in Colombia, Cambodia, Uganda, Yemen, and beyond. Again, that's Shake the Dust, May 23rd and 24th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on Monday, May 18th at 6:30 p.m. to hear host Amy Johnson interview Reverend Dr. Emily Bro, the chaplain at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, Oregon's only women's prison. As chaplain, she has an intimate understanding of the lives of the women incarcerated there and of our broken criminal justice system. She's an advocate for sentencing reform, restorative justice, and creating a culture of support in our society.